Charles Thompson's going to grill me about the Bilderberg conference because John Peters Coleman's ill.
Tony, hi. There's a big financial crisis, as we know, and something is going on in Spain. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that's right. I've been researching these very secretive meetings over the last 10, 12 years or so. It's called the Bilderberg Conference, and it's Kenneth Clark, who's now Lord Chancellor, is the one of the guys that goes over there from Britain. It's also David Rockefeller, who's one of the richest men in the world, owner of the Chase Manhattan Bank. But they meet every year in secret, about 120 people. And the meetings I've been to in the past have been pretty shocking, because even though you've got kings and queens there, Rupert Murdoch's general managers, some real top media people, the local press don't even know it's taking place. Once they do find out, then often the national media is down and covering it in spades. But it's quite disturbing that big financial matters and the people that control most of the money in the Western world can be meeting up in secret.
Are there any other people from the poorer countries going?
None at all, no. It's all from the NATO countries. So that's really North America and Europe.
How did these meetings start then?
Well, they started after the Second World War. They were funded by the Central Intelligence Agency, the American intelligence people. And the idea really was to have some political influence over Europe, to make sure that Europe didn't become sort of communist and go over to the Eastern Bloc. So that's how the meeting started, and they were started by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. He was in charge of Royal Dutch Airlines, KLM, and he's been exposed by Radio 4 as being involved in actually running Nazis after the Second World War over to South America as his role as director of Royal Dutch Airlines. But he was actually before the war in the SS, and he joined up enthusiastically before the war. So I think there's some serious questions about the origins of this group.
And why is it so secret?
Well, because I think they just don't want anyone to know that this is happening. In fact, a lot of the press people, the editors, for example, know it's going on, but they don't print anything about it. Now, thankfully, in the last few years, the mould has been broken somewhat. And last year, The Guardian sent Charlie Skelton to cover the conference, which took place in Greece. It's becoming more and more difficult to cover because they meet at these remote venues and the journalists can only get within about a mile of the conference itself. And his article, if people want to look it up, was called Let's Salt the Slug of Bilderberg.
Can you give me a couple of things that they might decide at this meeting that might be rather controversial?
Well, I think, for example, George Papandreou, who's the Prime Minister of Greece, and we've just seen what's been happening in Greece, there's a lot of controversy there because he's saying that he's not standing up for the Greek economy, that he's just basically giving in to the Eurocrats, and he's been a Bilderberg attendee for many years. The other thing is that the Iraq war, for example, was being discussed there in 2002 before the war started. So it does seem that there's there's more press exposure is necessary, and this is what the Guardian was calling for. And Charlie Skelton is actually organising a protest over in Spain this year.
So in a way they're trying to push the policies of the Western capitalists that might be unpopular.
Well, they are the people that control most of the money in the Western world, and they don't want that money to be distributed reasonably fairly. They want to keep it really to the elite. And I think we'll find out how it goes by just literally leaks from the conference, because there are always one or two leaks that come out.
And so where can we find information about this on the web?
Well, on Facebook, you'll find there's several Facebook sites looking at it. There's Jim Tucker, A Bilderberg Diary, and Bilderberg 2010, A Spanish Idyll, which is Charlie Skelton's site. And if you go to American Free Press, you'll find reports regularly throughout the conference. So there are one or two journalists there who are reporting on it fairly.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you. Over to Malcolm Greaves for another instalment of Secrets and Lies by David Southwell.
Secrets and Lies, leaked by David Southwell. It was Lenin who said, "A lie told often enough becomes the truth." When it comes to lies and covering up the truth, it seems there are liars, damned liars, and the media giants who control and censor what gets reported as fact. That may sound extreme, but it comes from someone who has spent the majority of his working life as a journalist and editor. It is said, whoever controls what you read and see, controls what you think. Most journalists don't consciously lie, but the media usually takes its views from official statements that are rarely challenged. By doing this, the media reinforces the official version of events, unwittingly spreading the lies they have been fed until the orthodox but wholly wrong version of events is the only one that we have easy access to. The internet was heralded as transforming our access to information and thereby the truth, but the information superhighway is gridlocked by so many lies that it's hard to know what to believe. We spend so much time just trying to get by in our lives and be happy that it's hard to find the time to question the information we are constantly bombarded with. The harsh reality is that even with the internet, most of us are as dependent on getting our facts from the traditional media as ever we were. It is sometimes hard to sense biases and lies, especially when they come from those you have a great deal of implicit trust in, meaning media manipulation is as widespread today as ever it was. If you ignore the wild conspiracy theories that go hand in hand with most mentions of the Bilderberg group, and concentrate on the facts, the true picture is of a collection of the richest and most powerful people on the planet who meet up once a year. Given the type of coverage that a gathering like the annual World Economic Forum meetings at Davos in Switzerland generates, you would expect that a gathering of world leaders, fast-rising politicians, key military thinkers, press barons, and the richest and most influential business figures on the planet would attract a few journalists. When the 2004 Bilderberg meeting in Italy drew Prime Minister Tony Blair, President George W. Bush, and Melinda Gates, wife of Bill Gates, you would think there would be a press stampede. In fact, there was almost a media blackout of the event. The few papers that mentioned it was due to happen did not send reporting teams to cover it. No major national or international news network attempted to film it. When people who usually draw journalists to them like moths to a flame can avoid publicity like that, it's fair to say that the Bilderberg Group is as secret as such an impressive collection of the world's rich and mighty can ever get. Why is such an important meeting underreported? In the 1990s, William Glasgow at Business Week suggested the reason was simply cost-cutting. After all, we can't afford to cover everything. But a journalist at The Economist, one of the UK's most important magazines, gave an alternative explanation. The Bilderbergers have been removed from our assignment list by executive order. Whilst policies may have changed, business magazines are still lacking the in-depth coverage that most readers would expect a Bilderberg gathering worthy of generating. Of course, there's another reason why journalists don't try to cover the Bilderberg Group meetings. In 1998, one plucky and independent-minded Scottish reporter tried to cover the Bilderberg Group meeting at the Turnberry Hotel in Ayrshire. For the crime of doing nothing more than asking questions, he was handcuffed by the Strathclyde police like a violent criminal and thrown into jail. During the Second World War, Hollywood swung its full creative talent into acting as a propaganda machine for the US military. But by the time of the Vietnam War, there was less of a gung-ho spirit in Tinseltown. Movies such as John Wayne's The Green Berets, an offensively overblown pro-Vietnam film, were becoming rarer. Hollywood's overt support for the US military had ended. However, the covert promotion of the US military by the American film industry was just starting to get into swing. Over the last 30-odd years, Hollywood's top filmmakers have often changed plots, altered scripts, and added scenes to their movies at the request of the Pentagon. In exchange, they have been provided with access to military vehicles and property during filming. Most of the changes were designed to show the US military in a more heroic light. Pentagon approval and help was sought for Armageddon, Air Force One, Pearl Harbor, and Top Gun. The remake of Day of the Jackal only got assistance after the Marines were given a better role. In Black Hawk Down, Ewan McGregor's character was renamed at the request of the Army, since the real-life soldier he was based on is currently in prison for the rape of a child under 12. One film that failed to secure Pentagon approval was Independence Day, despite extreme ass-kissing by its writer and producer Dean Devlin, who told them If this doesn't make every boy in the country want to fly a fighter jet, I'll eat the script. Devlin also agreed to turn the Secretary of Defense character, responsible for allowing military installations to be destroyed by the aliens, into the White House Chief of Staff. The Department of Defense still refused to help, saying that the military appears inept. All advances in stopping aliens are the result of actions by civilians. Even James Bond has become part of the Pentagon and Hollywood propaganda machine. In the original script of GoldenEye, a US Navy admiral betrayed state secrets. In return for US Army cooperation, this was changed to a French admiral. Advisory, not for publication. We have been asked by the Secretary of the Defense Press and Broadcasting Advisory Committee to publish the following. For the attention of all editors from the Secretary of Defense Press and Broadcasting Advisory Committee, I understand that when a newspaper editor in Britain sees these words at the start of an email or fax, he or she will have just received a D notice. The words following I understand will give them details of a story that they should not publish. The D notice is usually the government's kiss of death to any news that it does not want the public to know about. Although it lacks legal status, it takes a brave editor to ignore a D notice and its advice. The first D-Notice Committee was set up during the First World War to ensure that the press did not report anything that could damage the national interest. The D stood for defence, and the notices were only advisory. The system continued after the war, becoming a way for the British government to exercise pressure on the press without having to prosecute them under the Official Secrets Act, a counterproductive action as it tends to generate additional attention. The system was operated by the Admiralty, and proved successful in encouraging widespread self-censorship by the British press of stories that the government considered sensitive and embarrassing, as well as damaging to the defence of the country. In 1993, the old D-Notice Committee was renamed Defence, Press and Broadcasting Advisory Committee, and for the first time included selected editors, as well as Ministry of Defence and intelligence officials. It now issues DA notices, Defence Advisory, but its meetings are held in secret, and their decision-making process classified. The same cosy collusion by the press with the committee to keep the public in the dark remains in force. Duncan Campbell, one of the world's leading investigative reporters and someone who has dared to ignore D-notices, has said he actually found them to be useful sources of leads for stories.